Case number 13-5038, Kevin Hairston, Appellant v. Davida Vance Cooks, Acting Public Printer, United States Government Printing Office. Mr. Wolfman for the Appellant, Mr. Guzman for the Appellee.
Good
morning.
May it please the Court, Brian Wolfman for Appellant Kevin Hairston. I'd like to use my 10 minutes to focus on Mr. Hairston's non-promotion race discrimination claim. Following normal GPO procedures, Kevin Hairston was selected by his immediate supervisor, the person in the best position to know, for a promotion which was then approved by someone else in his chain of command who told him that he had the position. The job was then revoked by the plant manager, who lacked any basis for assessing his qualifications. The non-discriminatory justification for the revocation has been countered by Mr. Hairston.
Wait a minute. You were revoked by Bernazzoli, you mean?
Yes.
Who had no reason to do so, you're saying?
No, I said he himself had no basis, that's our case, for assessing his qualifications. That was his testimony.
As opposed to asking other people?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the non-discriminatory justifications given by GPO, given by Mr. Bernazzoli, in fact, have been countered by Mr. Hairston, and if accepted by a finder of fact, that would be sufficient to rule in Mr. Hairston's favor.
Now, let me just stop you a second. You keep using the phrase revoked, and maybe I misunderstood what happened here, but I thought the decision maker was the man who said, no, I'm not going to promote him.
No, with respect, Judge Henderson.
The others were recommenders, I thought.
No, there was a recommender and an approver. The recommender.
All right, and who was the approver?
The approver was Mr. Domorosky. And in fact, after that occurred, Mr. Domorosky told Mr. Hairston that he got the position, and someone in the HR department wrote to one of her underlings saying, offer the position to Mr. Hairston. What happened here was unusual, to be sure, that the plant manager revoked the promotion. Now, I don't think the word revoked, I don't think this case turns on the words promote and revoke. I was just trying to describe what in fact occurred. So I think under this
But you're not arguing that he didn't have any authority not to promote him.
We are not arguing in this case that any of these individuals did or did not have the authority, and I think the plant manager would have the authority to do so in this case. Our position is simply that the reasons given were pretextual, and that this case should not have been aborted at the summary judgment stage. The plant manager who revoked the promotion, Mr. Bernazzoli, claimed at deposition, and this goes to your question, Judge Ginsburg, that he was unfamiliar with the job and that he had turned to an assistant, Marvin Verder. Verder testified that he knew nothing about the situation. Indeed, he didn't know about the position or Mr. Harrison's qualifications until he was noticed for his deposition in this case. And perhaps more importantly, Verder testified that he wouldn't have had any reason to know. They worked in different places in the plant, they had different jobs, and in fact, they worked on different shifts. That was his testimony. And note as well that in his earlier EEO affidavit, Bernazzoli claimed that Hairston was unqualified, to be sure, but he didn't mention anything about a conversation with Verder or anyone else.
At the end of the day, though, Verder says, look, it could have happened, but I don't remember anything about it.
Well, at the end, that would be something for a jury to assess. I would say at the end of the day.
He never contradicted it. He never said it didn't happen. Or at least that the bottom line was not his saying it didn't happen. He said he didn't recall any such conversation. It's possible it could have happened, but he didn't recall it.
With respect, yes and no, and I'm not trying to evade the question. For the first seven pages of the relevant deposition testimony, he says he doesn't know anything about this, and he would have no reason to know what his qualifications are. A recess is taken in the deposition, and then at that point, on questioning from his attorney, he says that, oh, it might have happened. It might have happened. And then he repeats. Yeah.
And I think Bernazzoli had said Werder was sort of his right-hand man, right?
That's right. He said he was his eyes and ears on the floor. Werder's testimony was quite different, that he wasn't on the floor and hadn't been on the floor for 2.5 years. That's what was Werder's testimony, that I worked on a different shift and I managed the delivery section of the plant, and that he didn't know anything about Hairston, had rarely seen him since he was in his apprenticeship 2.5 years early. That was his testimony. So that draws into serious question either the notion that he consulted Werder at all, and certainly the content of any conversation he might have had with Werder. It's unclear why he would have gone to Werder for an opinion on Hairston since he wasn't on the floor, and it's quite unclear why Werder would have given that sort of advice to Bernazzoli, because he had just got done explaining why he would have no reason to know anything about
Hairston. And you think that from that a jury could conclude that Bernazzoli was not just wrong about what he said about Werder, not just mistaken, but venal.
But lying, yes, that is correct. And
it would have been a pretty stupid lie, wouldn't it? If he had maybe had a conversation with someone else, maybe he never had a conversation with anyone. Say he had a conversation with someone who's completely out of the chain of command relevant to Hairston. Seems like a real stretch to make any kind of inference from that.
Your Honor, we don't know whether this was...
If a jury said that's what I would do, I don't know that their verdict could stand.
Well, maybe so, Your Honor, but the question here is, you know, we think that's right. We think either this conversation didn't happen, the conversation that he was mistaken, perhaps, but the content of the conversation, if one was had, would not have been this content. If he had consulted Werder, after Werder just gets done testifying that he doesn't know anything about this situation, never heard of the opening, and wouldn't have reason to know this man's qualifications. In fact, you know, he said that he didn't know anything about this press because he had been off the floor for a number of years, and the press hadn't even been acquired by GPO until after he was in management and running the delivery section of the plant.
Well, if Bernazzoli's concern was that whoever was hired had to be able to go from day one and would not need training, why wouldn't he ask Werder about his training him in the apprenticeship? In other words, if his concern was, is he someone who could be trained in 2 days, or is he someone who can be trained in 6 months?
Well, I think there's two answers to that, Your Honor. First of all, he didn't testify that's what he consulted him about, and Werder certainly didn't testify that that's what he was consulted about, the training.
What did they testify about what was consulted?
Well, Werder said, if I were asked, I would have said he was a lackadaisical worker during his apprenticeship and so forth, and that this wasn't a training position. Again, remember that this occurred after a break in the testimony, and he now... After saying he knows nothing about this, he now starts repeating this training position mantra. But let's be clear that about one thing, that Bernazzoli admitted that if he had to go outside the plant, he couldn't remotely get someone to run that press immediately. He said there would be a delay, and in fact there was a delay, significant delay, the one Bernazzoli anticipated, and in fact, Mr. Hairston could have been on the job for 6.5 months before a new person.
Well, that's all ex post. What did he say ex ante about how long it would take or what expectation he had?
He didn't say, actually.
Well, now we know from one or two sources in the record that it would have taken 6 to 8 months to train Hairston, right? So what is there reflecting on Bernazzoli's impression of how long it would take to get an outsider?
He didn't give a specific date. He just said he knew there would be delay to going outside. In fact,
because they have to repost it, they have to find the right person, they have to get them signed up.
Right, and they didn't act with alacrity, which I think undermines.
That's ex post. That's not his doing.
Well, That is correct, but it does bear on, I think, the truth. He's sitting there saying we have to act immediately, and then immediately he doesn't act immediately. And I think
he doesn't act immediately? He didn't do, what did he not do?
They didn't post the job for
him. No, Bernazzoli.
Well, we don't know who is.
No, that's not, he's not, he doesn't do the hiring.
That is correct, but I think on this score, I think they have some burden here. I mean, they don't come forward with anything about who is responsible for
posting. The decision maker's state of mind at the time he made the decision is the issue here. Whatever happened later and what other people did doesn't bear on that. Now, something he might have said later, of course, could bear back
right
on it.
But that is correct, Your Honor, but he never says anything, oh, I can get this job posted immediately. I'm just saying that if all I'm saying is that if Bernazzoli wanted to get this thing posted immediately and he had a need, he said he had a need for someone to take the press immediately, he testified and said in his EEO affidavit that this couldn't happen immediately.
Well, he was the one responsible for issuing the first vacancy announcement, right, Bernazzoli?
Well, I think the record's unclear on that. I mean, the HR department issued the first
vacancy announcement. But it was to fill this very slot.
That is correct.
Sure.
And I will point out as well, I mean, Justice Ginsburg, you asked about, you know, who did they consult? Bernazzoli did not consult the person who testified at that position that he would be the person in the best position to know, Hayward. Hayward said he could immediately be the second man. And that draws
Hayward said that Hairston could immediately be the second man.
Could immediately take the position as the second man.
One or two other people said, somebody said it'll take 6 to 8 months of training.
Well, not DeMarsh quite, Your Honor. What they said is that it would take 6 to 8 months to be able to run the machine independently. But he'd applied for the second offset press position. What Hayward testified to, and Hayward recommended him for the position, and Domorosky approved him.
Who said independently? Who was it you quoted saying independently?
Well, I think there's some testimony in the record that in 6 to 8 months you could be running the press. You could be the, in effect,
I understand that.
Head
do you remember
press
who
person
said that? Okay. All right.
Well, I think even Hayward said that, and I think perhaps, well, maybe Hayward and maybe one other. But my point is that Hayward testified that he immediately could take up the reins and be the second man.
That's not what I have. I have that Hayward, although he recommended him, said in his affidavit that Harrison's 2 years of experience post-apprenticeship is really not a lot of experience, and that he was far from the seasoned veteran that the GPO was hoping to hire, and that he could be trained without a problem, but that it would have taken 6 to 8 months.
6 to 8 months to be running the press. He said that he felt, this is at 614 of the Joint Appendix, he, Kevin Harris, could work as the second man, and that he could do that, and that he could do that when he went to the press. Now, that's in the record, and that's in fact
what
he did.
Well, what is the reference to that he was not a seasoned veteran? Was that not to the second, but to the...
Well, I mean, it is true that, I don't know what that references to, but he had been there. The facts are what they are. He had been running a press for over 2 years, and before that he had been in a 2-year apprenticeship, which 6 months of which involved working on this machine.
Any more questions?
Actually, give me a moment if you would. Right now, is this incorrect? You were at 614, you said?
Yes.
Okay. The government's brief at 5 cites that page and describes it in a way that you may regard as inaccurate. They write, based on Hairston's 2 years of experience, Hayward believed that Hairston could, quote, immediately do part of the job, close quote, but would need approximately 6 to 8 months of, quote, proper, close quote, training in order to fully assume the position. Is that right? Is that your understanding as well? He could immediately do part of the job.
He could immediately do the second offset press person job. In other words, he could be the second man.
Well, Is that what it means?
The immediately new part of the job already direct was vacant.
So no, which job is it part of?
I'm reading from line 12. He could work as the second man and get some additional training to learn how to operate the other end of the equipment in due time.
And does the other end, what does that mean?
The other end is being the head press person.
Line 9 through 10 is immediately new part of it.
Well, he may say that, but he applied for the second offset press person position, and Mr. Hayward is saying he could be the second man.
The testimony on which you were relying, and that testimony immediately refers to immediately do part of the job.
Right.
Lines 9 and 10.
Yes, and I think that is, that to the extent that he said that, that is mistaken, because he applied for the second offset press person position, and he said he could be the second man.
Who's testifying at this point?
Mr. Hayward.
Hayward, okay. So the question to Hayward is, why did you select Harrison for the position? Answer, even though he had only 2 years' experience as a journeyman, I felt he could move into that position. That position, the one that's being filled, not the head man on the press, but the one that's being filled.
Could do that immediately
part of the job. And he'd have an opportunity to learn the rest. Because obviously he couldn't run the press. He could work as the second man and get some additional training to learn how to operate. It's a little ambiguous now.
Well, I think that's
how to operate the other
end. There may be some ambiguity, but I think that in general supports our position. But Judge Ginsburg, again, as you say,
the next question, how long do you anticipate it would take him to train to do the job? That's the job he's being selected for. That's a very difficult question to answer. Says Hayward, in order to train somebody properly, you would need somebody to replace him in his current job to free him up to train him at the other end of the press. If he had that opportunity, he may be able to pick the skills up. My best guess would be maybe 6 to 8 months.
I understand that, Your Honor, but here again, the question again, this is ex post as well. The question is whether he was applying for the second offset press person position. Hayward says he can be the second man, but Bernazzoli did not consult Hayward. He said he consulted Werder, and we have shown that not only is that mistaken, but there's significant evidence in the record that that was a lie.
So what we have here is Hayward.
Bernazzoli doesn't claim to be acting on this.
Hayward's made the selection, initial selection,
correct,
of Hairston, right?
That is correct.
And he's
correct.
Explaining it and saying, well, I thought in 6 to 8 months he could even master the whole thing. Right?
Be the head person, yes.
And Bernazzoli says, I want someone from outside who can step right in and do the whole job now. That's basically what it comes down to, right? So deselected.
Right. Right. He deselects him, but the reasons he's given have been shown as pretextual. And at least there's significant evidence that that is so, and that should be resolved by the jury. At least there's ambiguity as to whether he's ever consulted anyone. And it's certainly very strong ambiguity as to whether he consulted Mr. Werder, as he said.
Okay, so the listing for the job is at 67 in the appendix. Job opportunity. And it says that the person they're looking for must have, quote, experience and or training of sufficient scope and quality to independently perform the position's duties. These duties require skill in the independent operation of offset press machinery. So they want someone in the second job who could run it in the first job, right?
I think that is ambiguous based on this. It says the ability to do the work of a second offset press person with normal supervision. And so the idea is that someone would come in and do the job and ultimately be able to run the press. Now, it turns out here that he was running the press within 3 weeks. That's unrebutted on this record. I realize that's post hoc, but so is the use of the information concerning Hayward post hoc. The point is that the justifications given by Bernazzoli, that he needed someone to step in immediately when he knew full well he couldn't have someone immediately, and that he consulted Werder, who testified he knew nothing about the job, at the very least presents evidence of pretext.
Wasn't one problem that Bernazzoli was thinking other people would apply for it, other people who were immediately able to do it, and they didn't apply?
That's again, a possibility, but the principal reasons given
here. Well, I thought there was some evidence of that.
Well, the evidence is, and we also argued below, they don't press that strongly on appeal, but we argued below that those individuals had already, they would have been demotions for those individuals. But in any event, that what I'm relying on here is the principal reasons given were, he says, he learns of the promotion, and he says he consults Werder. We've shown at the very least that, and that Werder tells him he's incapable of doing the job. We've shown at the very least that strong question of whether that conversation ever took place, and if it did, the content of it couldn't support Bernazzoli's description of it because of Werder's lack of knowledge. The second principal reason is that he needed someone to step in immediately, knowing full well that he couldn't get someone immediately in light of the procedures of the office. And I don't think there's any question about those two things, and those were the reasons given, unless the court has anything further.
All right. Thank we'll you. Give you a couple of minutes and reply. Mr. Guzman? Can I ask you one question to begin with?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was Bernazzoli the final decision maker or not?
Yes, he was the final decision maker.
All right, so he was not promoted. It was not that his promotion was revoked.
We believe so, Your Honor. Let me answer that in two parts.
Right.
One, Mr. Bernazzoli was the production manager and the official ultimately responsible for the passport production and the operation of the passport press on the press floor. And the second part of that is we don't think the case turns on whether the promotion ultimately was a revocation of something that was afforded to
him. I don't either. I'm just trying to get it straight.
Yes.
If Bernazzoli had not done something, there would have been no promotion. Is that correct?
That's right. That's why Mr. Domorowski went to Mr. Bernazzoli in the first instance and said, this is the person we've settled on. Now, let me make two contextual points about that. One being that Mr. Wolfman has pointed out only that Mr. Bernazzoli consulted with Werder, and he said that there's a question of fact as to whether that in fact happened. In fact, Mr. Bernazzoli has testified he spoke both with Mr. Domorowski, who spoke with Mr. Hayward. Domorowski and Hayward were Harrison's supervisors at the time of the application of the first vacancy announcement. And second of all, that he did in fact speak with Mr. Werder. And as Judge Ginsburg pointed out, what Mr. Werder has said is, I don't recall that conversation. Mr. Werder has never said that conversation ever happened or disavowed it. The fact of the matter was that Werder and Bernazzoli, one was the production manager, the other one was the assistant production manager, and they worked very closely and consulted innumerable times every day on matters affecting the press floor and the operation of the presses. In our view, that does not create a material fact issue that gets that creates a jury question here. As we've cited cases in our brief from the D.C. Circuit, the Paquin case being one of them, as well as cases from other circuit, it's the court has declined to find a factual issue where one person has testified to the recollection of a conversation and the other participant to it has not. That's not uncommon in cases where discovery is taking place several years after the fact and there are any number of conversations that may have happened in that distant past. So we don't believe that there's any fact question with respect to the existence of the conversation between Bernazzoli and Werder. And second of all, there is undisputed evidence that Bernazzoli consulted not just with Werder, but with Domorowski. And Domorowski and Hairston would have been in the best position, as Mr. Wolfman has said, as Hairston's supervisors, to comment on whether he was ready to step into this position from the beginning. And that takes me to my next point, which is that it's undisputed here in the record two things. One, that this was not a training position. It was not viewed as such. We were talking about the most complex presses in the press room, as well as passport production, which was one of the most sensitive projects going on at GPO at the time. And second of all, that any number of supervisors and experienced press persons all testified in one form or another that Mr. Hairston did not have the requisite experience at that time to operate the press. He would need at least 6 to 8 months of training to be able to do the second offset press person's job. Now, one of the duties of the second offset press person is not just his own duties, but to spell for the head offset press person when the head is on break or maybe unavailable, tending to something else. So it's not just the ability to do whatever discrete duties the second has, but also to be able to step into the duties or oversee the duties that the head otherwise would have. So in this case, both supervisors who work with Mr. Hairston, supervisors who were familiar with the passport press and what that entailed, all said that he would need some additional period of training. Also critical, Mr. Hayward said that training would require a fifth person being added to the team to be able to affect and give him the training that was needed. In other words, to free up Mr. Hairston to work both ends of the press in order to be able to fully assume the second offset press person position. Now, recall at this time, or you'll see in the record, that the passport presses were operating at capacity at that time. This was a third shift. It meant the overnight shift. It meant taking someone else from a capacity run and putting them on the overnight shift to create essentially a five-person team for a 6-8 month period at a time when resources were at their limit in terms of passport production. So in our view, we believe that the district court correctly granted summary judgment on the non-selection claim, finding that there was no evidence of racial discrimination or racial animus in Bernazzoli's decision not to fill the position under the first announcement, but in fact to re-announce it and seek applicants from the outside.
Why couldn't a jury conclude that Bernazzoli's testimony about Werder in particular was clearly phony, and that he's covering up something?
Well, Your Honor, a couple of points I would make in response to that question. One, as we said before, Werder never denied.
I understand that. He said, he came close to denying it before the recess, and then ultimately says, it's possible.
Well, even before the recess, Mr. Werder was made clear, he qualified his responses. In other words, he said, to my recollection, to my knowledge, this conversation didn't happen.
Okay, but suppose a jury found that incredible. Found Bernazzoli, incredible in claiming that it happened.
Sure. Well, then that would be a few things that we believe would make a jury verdict unsustainable. One is that Mr. Werder himself is African-American, like Mr. Hairston. So that would mean that Mr. Werder, the jury would have to conclude that Mr. Werder was lying, in effect, also about his opinion and what he would have told Mr. Bernazzoli in order to effectuate discrimination against another African-American. And we believe that there are cases the circuit has held. For example,
they would have to conclude that Werder was lying, too?
Yes.
Why? He said, if asked, here's what I would have said.
That's right, but the important part is what he would have said is consistent with what everyone else had said, including Mr. Hairston's own supervisors at the time of the application. They're all consistent in the view of Mr. Hairston's ability to step into the job.
Hairston's supervisors did recommend him for promotion.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
that's what we have ex ante on their position, viewpoint, whatever. They did recommend him.
That's correct, Your Honor. They did. There were two applicants for that position under the first announcement. None of the folks that Mr. Bernazzoli had in mind, which were three folks, including one African-American. That's important because it goes to the question of Mr. Bernazzoli's intent or state of mind. If he, in fact, considered or had in mind one African-American applicant who he thought could step into the position and do it and would gladly hire him, then it cuts against any inference that he didn't select or canceled the position with respect to Mr. Hairston because of Mr. Hairston's race. Mr. Bernazzoli also hired Mr. Werder as his assistant, who's, as I pointed out, African-American. So it shows that there's a record here of Mr. Bernazzoli, in fact, hiring African-Americans, or at least having them in mind, that cuts against or weighs against the inference that Hairston is asking the court to draw here or asking the district court to draw. So there were two, to finish my answer, Judge Santella, there were only two applicants for that position, only one of who was found to meet the minimum qualifications of the position, Mr. Hairston. So Hayward and Domorowski realized this. They felt they didn't have a choice but to go with the one person. And that's when Domorowski briefed Mr. Bernazzoli, this is the situation we have, this is the person. And Bernazzoli ultimately concluded, let's re-advertise the position and see if we can get someone from outside.
Are you saying their recommendations were conditional? In other words, they said, of the two, he's the better?
They could only select the eligible list that was forwarded to Mr. Hayward. Mr. Domorowski had only one name on it, Mr. Hairston.
Okay.
Of the two individuals who applied, only one was found to meet the qualifications. Okay. They knew Mr. Hairston, and they knew this is who we were getting. It wasn't within their authority or up to them to, at that point, re-announce the position or to make any unilateral decision. What the record shows is Mr. Domorowski informed Mr. Bernazzoli, here's the situation. Here's who we're prepared to go with, but understand this.
Can I ask you, was Verder asked before the recess in his deposition when he first learned of this? Because I don't have the joint appendix, but at 648, I have the reference that he said before the recess that the first time he learned that Hairston had applied for this was when he was notified of his deposition.
Is it 648?
That's right. Okay. You want to see?
So,
okay. Yes, I see it, Your Honor.
Are you aware that this, I am now? Okay. That's the first time I'd heard anything about it. All right, so then there's a recess, and they come back, and he says, I may have had that conversation. I don't remember. So he's really contradicting what he said before. That is, I didn't know anything about this until I got my notice to be deposed.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that there is a contradiction there. I believe the conversation that Verder had with Bernazzoli was about whether this was a training position, whether he believed that someone with a limited set of experience on color presses or very little experience on them could step into this position. That's what Bernazzoli and Verder discussed.
You mean as like a hypothetical or something? He didn't mention the name of Hairston?
Well, that's not clear from the record whether he did or didn't, and we wouldn't. So that would be the way I'd answer it. I'm not sure that the record indicates exactly whether Bernazzoli said, what do you think of Hairston? Or the question we believe that the testimony addresses is what the nature of what this position would be in light of the press that was involved.
Did the government depose Domorowski?
I'm pardon?
Did the government depose Domorowski?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Domorowski, did the government take his deposition?
No, the government did not.
Why?
It's not clear from the record, Your Honor. I cannot answer that question as to why he was not deposed. By either side.
By either side, okay.
Correct.
So he may have been unavailable for some reason.
That's possible. That I'd be speculating. If Your Honors have no further questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Mr. Guzman doesn't have any time. All right. Why don't you take 2 minutes?
I will try to be brief. I want to start where you ended, Judge Henderson. And this came up with questions from Judge Ginsburg as well. As to Mr. Domorowski, I handled the case below, and there was no suggestion that he wasn't available. The GPO came in with a number of employee affidavits, but not one from Mr. Domorowski.
You didn't depose Domorowski.
That is correct, Judge Santel. But let's be clear about this. Below, the GPO never relied on a conversation with Mr. Domorowski at all. This is a creation of the appellate advocacy. If you look at footnote one of our reply brief, we point out that Domorowski, he was the approving official. He approved the job. We didn't have any need or interest in taking his deposition unless we had heard of anything that would have concerned us about Mr. Domorowski.
I'm not faulting your.
Yeah, no, I understand that, Judge Santel. But
I don't understand what you just said. Hairston, pardon me. Bernazzoli said Domorowski came to him, right?
Yes, but once we viewed, as we explained in our briefs, we viewed Bernazzoli's deposition testimony as ambiguous, and that what he said later is, it was Marvin that came to me.
He says that later. So we assumed that that had scratched out Demirovsky. And then in the district court, as I said, the GPO did not rely on an alleged conversation with Mr. Demirovsky. That came up only in the appellate brief. And let me say...
Well, but there are some record citations. Right?
There are citations. There is an indication in Mr. Bernazzoli's deposition that first it was that he heard this from Mr. Demirovsky. Didn't say what he had heard, but that Demirovsky had come from it. By the end of his deposition, he says, it was Mr. Werder. We took that to mean there was only one contact. But in any event, we didn't have any reason to question the Demirovsky situation. He was the approving official. Moreover...
But you do have a responsibility to put some of your... to refute what the other side is saying, and he was one of your defenders.
Yeah, well, we thought we had enough with respect to Mr. Demirovsky. And again, I emphasize that in their summary judgment brief, they don't rely for their justification for the non-promotion, revocation, however you want to call it, on an alleged conversation with Mr. Demirovsky. Again, he was the approving official. And indeed, in Mr. Hairston's summary judgment declaration, unrebutted, between a week or two after Mr. Hairston is told that he has the promotion, he's in Mr. Demirovsky's office, and he assures him that he approved him for the promotion. So we had no reason to doubt anything about Mr. Demirovsky. Let me just say one other thing, and this goes to a question from Judge Santel. I don't know anything turns on this, but you asked about it, Judge Santel. I don't think there's any question on this record that there was not a general need for Mr. Bernazzoli to approve these type of positions. I don't know. Again, I don't know that anything turns on it.
You're disputing whether the decision maker was Mr. Bernazzoli?
No, he made the decision. I'm just saying ordinarily this would go through. If you look at page 72, there's a selection acknowledgement form. This is after Hayward selects and Demirovsky approves. And it says it's from the HR department, and a higher-level person in the HR department is saying to someone named Marilyn, please offer the position and your exceptions, and upon exceptions, code action for my review. So it looks like this was going through. Now, we don't know what happened in between. All we know is that there are strong reasons to believe that the justifications given by GPO were pretextual, and therefore the case shouldn't have been aborted at summary judgment. Unless the court has anything further.
All right. Thank you.